Hi, I'm Simone Maben, a physician, a graduate of the Air Force Academy, a professional athlete, and a certified personal trainer. This is a podcast about living a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year. Hello! I'm back, and I'm so excited to be back to my podcast. It has been a minute since I got to drop an episode, and primarily it's just that I've been focusing on this health coaching certification program that I'm so excited to share with you guys. I want to go a little bit in this episode about what health coaching is and how that helps people with the other things that I do and how I'm going to intertwine that with some of my other goals. And with that said, I'm also going to describe what it's like to give yourself some grace when you are shifting between health and wellness goals, just allowing yourself to not be perfect, God forbid. And from there, we're going to move on to another topic that came up this week. It was really hot on my Instagram, which is all about the steam room and sauna discussion. So recently, my gym sauna was broken, and so I chose to use the steam room instead. And even yesterday, I visited this traditional Korean bathhouse that was laden with saunas of all types. So this got me thinking, what science really exists behind the use of the hot rooms? You guys know, I'm all about bringing truth to our health and fitness actions. So I decided to do the research, and in today's episode, I'll share it with you. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe, like, or favorite on your listening platform. Please take time to leave a review on the Apple Podcast. These opinions do not represent my employer or any associated partnerships. None of my opinions should be considered medical advice. What is health coaching? I think no one knows what this is unless you worked with me the last few months as a client. You probably never heard of what a health coach is. I know I never did until I was at Vanderbilt doing my residency and we were exposed to these particular experts at our integrative health center. When I heard about the health coaching opportunity there, I just knew it fit me. Like it said Simone Maben all over it. And the reason why is to become a health coach, you have to already have a background in the healthcare industry. So it's not like a personal trainer where you can just study and pass the test. You have to have some type of healthcare medical training or health training, and then you learn these additional skills that revolve around behavior change. And so through this certificate program, you learn about supporting clients' goals, unearthing what values they even have. You'd be surprised the number of people that couldn't tell me what they really valued when we started this process. And it's my job to help identify those, because what we've found out is that the number one way for people to meet their health and wellness goals is by really rooting in on their values. And we help establish some very specific ways in which you develop goals. But then we even help to identify the strengths and motivations, and then help keep you accountable as you're moving forward through your changes as a person. The really interesting thing is that it sounds like we might just focus on weight loss and nutrition by the term health. But if you think about health, and what I learned through the certificate program is that it really embodies the entire person. And so we investigate all aspects of being, and it can be, of course, nourishment and movement, like most people would assume. But there's other aspects such as your sleep, your community and relationships, your spiritual health, compassionate self-awareness, a few other things, your environment. Overall, if you spend a lot of time in developing these areas, you start to feel like you're moving in the right direction to where you want to be. One area that stands out to a lot of clients is the daily rhythm and balance, which is your schedule, essentially. A lot of people through our visualization process identify that as maybe being a primary area of their life that they want to improve upon, because they find that a lot of things crouch upon that. Now, that's not in the basic principles of health coaching. To be honest, there's another item in which we think everything else revolves around your success of moving forward, and that is the item of compassionate self-awareness. Compassionate self-awareness is really being aware of your strengths and your weaknesses, your reactions, and why you're reacting a certain way, and having a deep understanding of the meaning of those things. Another primary thing that a lot of people like to focus on as well is mind-body connection, and develop some type of mindfulness or meditation if they find so appropriate. As you can see, the items are expansive, and one cannot go well without the other. And typically clients want to focus on more than one area, but what we help to do is take it step by step and breaking down things into baby steps and establishing sustainable, really important word, sustainable healthy behaviors and attitudes. And so you work one-on-one with the health coach in a very intimate process in which you get to know each other really well. And I really like that, because I feel like in my other settings, such as, you know, being a doctor or a personal trainer, those relationships are a little bit more directive in nature, whereas in the health coaching experience, the client directs where we're going. And I help to align and keep us on track. But what we have found is that the latter technique is what actually leads to sustainable change. The technique of directing people where they're going to go by, you will do this, you will follow this, fails time and time again. And there's a lot of studies that show this. You know, nothing I'm saying is just my opinion here. This is all in development of how health coaching exists to even be a certification program. I mean, even now, sitting to be nationally board certified. So anyway, I finished all the academics for this health coaching program, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago. And then I spent time doing a practicum of coaching 10 clients. Well, I started with 10. And of course, some people dropped out because that's just how life is. And I finished with finally having about 70 sessions of clients that would be documented. Mind you, it's not 70 hours, much more than 70 hours. Some of these sessions can be an hour and a half to 2 hours. And so I would go to work every day on my fellowship, and I'd come home at night or on the weekends. I'm just coaching clients, you know, utilizing all these skills and getting feedback from my coaches about what I could do to be better. And when I would struggle with a client, what techniques I could use. You know, it's a lot of practicing and trial and error to see what works, and using different techniques for positive change and seeing where things land with the clients. It's really, really fun. It's been awesome to hear my clients' feedback and the goals that they've achieved in just a few months is just amazing. Like, I'm so proud of all my clients. Thanks to any of you guys listening that took the journey with me. I really, really loved it. So what's next at this point is to use the health coaching certificate. Some people might wonder, like, why did you do the certificate program? You know, having a medical degree, like, you should be set. Well, I think it's a whole nother discussion to get into the topic of the way the clinical system is set up right now and how health coaching isn't really easy to bill for and introduce into the clinical setting. But I think it is, well, it is definitely being done certain places, and I'd like to be a vector for change in that respect into many of our clinics. And I have some ideas set up in which that can be implemented. So definitely coaching some, but a lot of helping to direct the implementation of the health coaching concept intertwined into behavior change for clients when it comes to medical things or aesthetic things or just mental well-being. I think the health coaching concept has to be implemented in some way. And so there's definitely, hopefully, going to be a change in which more people recognize this term, the health coach, as it becomes more affordable for people and more recognized as a normal term, just like the word psychologist or doctor. So what's next is I'm taking a break from taking clients for that now, because obviously now I'm focusing here on the podcast and some other things. Plus it's just extremely emotionally involved, and so you can do so much of that with the high maintenance requirements of managing pain patients in clinics right now. And so focusing on the podcast will allow me time to develop what my clinical setting for health coaching clients will be look like, what that will look like. So I will not be taking health coaching clients right now, unfortunately, but I hope to in the future. If what you heard about health coaching sounds intriguing to you or something that you think might work for you, even though I can't offer the service at this time, you can reach out to me and I can put you in touch with some people that are offering health coaching through the certificate program. So it would be of minimal charge to you or maybe even free depending on that coach. So you can always message me on Instagram. Simone Maben is my name, or you can email me simone.maben@gmail.com. And just let me know that you're interested in what the health coaching program would look like. Just remember, it's not me that's going to be able to health coach you at this moment. Another resource for you, if you're interested, obviously you can just Google it, but Vanderbilt often can put you in touch with someone that is doing the coaching program as well. So that's where I'm getting my certificate through. And so you could go to their website, vanderbilthealth.com/Osher, O-S-H-E-R, and contact them and let them know that you're interested in, you know, health coach and want to know what the opportunities exist for you if you're interested in that way. I get the takeaway from this health coaching topic is really just to be aware that this expert does exist within the realm of health and wellness, and to look for that opportunity if you feel like you want to succeed in a way that really embraces your values and your goals rather than a directive stance that truly exists in the personal training or life coaching experience at times. One of the biggest things I learned from my clients' health coaching over the last few months was how hard we are on ourselves. I mean, every step we take through health coaching is building upon an action step, and which is like a mini goal for the week or two that we're apart. And it's just amazing how hard people are on themselves when they're not able to achieve the goal that they set. And this actually taps back into episode 5, where I talked a little bit about body dysmorphia and having that extreme disorder, or having this idea of extreme expectations of your body, really so extreme they don't make sense. And then even in the same episode, talking about expectations for your length and intensity of workout being kind of out of bounds for where you are at that moment, and kind of letting go of the high expectation. So I want to kind of come back and touch specifically on this concept alone of giving yourself grace. What I mean by that is realizing that a failure in your eyes is really part of the building process. And so a lot of times learning what behaviors are going to lead to your sustainable change come from trying things that don't work. If you knew that the actions you were going to choose at the beginning were not going to be successful, why would you choose them? We're all really excited when we pick goals. You write them down, or you envision them, or you put them in your phone, you discuss them with a partner, and then undoubtedly something gets in the way. It could be a physical thing like an injury, or a change in schedule, or family, or it could be financial, something out of your control, the financial means to buy the things you thought you needed to be successful. Or it can be, what happens a lot is it can be a change in mental attitude and motivation, and the energy that existed once around that goal, for some reason, it is as fiery as it was before. In that moment is when you have to check yourself and realize that this is part of the process. What really differentiates success or not is your ability to take the ebbs and flows of moving towards your goal, and realizing that as long as you pick yourself up and hopefully readjust because what you were doing was not working. I'll repeat that. What you were doing was not working. So readjust. And you will see the trajectory is still up. It's just a slow guide up rather than this fast, steep angle. And over time, allowing yourself to give yourself grace and just letting those failures be okay is healthy, because what you're doing is you're identifying what really does work for you, what is personal. I tell my clients again and again that the plan you're doing right now is not in Oxygen magazine. It's not in Health magazine. These ideas built around your values are not written down anywhere. You had to come up with these, and that's why they take a lot of time. With coming up with very specific strength and value-based goals and action steps comes from you actually getting to know yourself. It's amazing the number of people I work with in their 40s and 50s that really don't know what their strengths or weaknesses are until we go through an exercise together, and much more so keep picking actions that depend upon a weakness or something they don't even value. It's what somebody else told them they should value. And so that's not your fault. It's just you've never taken the time to really get to know yourself in the in-depth level you are at this moment in which you're identifying a new direction for yourself. And so the takeaway is really for you to allow yourself some grace as you're moving forward and getting to know yourself, and realize that as long as you change your trajectory and modify your goals, you still will be successful, but you would just have to take it at the pace in which you're actually learning. Oh my gosh, there's nothing better than a nice sauna. When I'm sore or when it's cold outside, whatever reason, I love using the sauna, and it's been part of my practice for so many years now. Typically, it helps me to recover from workouts, but I didn't really know why. I just know I feel better when I leave, and so I've been using it routinely. And then one day, I was at my gym, and I was going to use the sauna. It was out, so I had to use the steam room. That got me thinking whether or not this was as beneficial, so I posted a question on Instagram just to see what everyone thought. And I was shocked to see that there really wasn't any other answers about how beneficial it was. And I really did think I was the only one that just didn't know. Nobody really knew. And now that I've done more research, I understand why, and I'll share more as we go forward here. So I got lucky and I was able to go to a Korean bathhouse this weekend. And oh my gosh, when you walk in, mind blown at how many different types of saunas there are. And so this was perfect. So I had that full embodied experience as I did my research and started getting into this topic for the podcast. Well, let's start off by comparing the steam room and the sauna. So your steam room is going to have a lower temperature. They're usually between 110 and 114 degrees Fahrenheit, but 100% humidity. And that's what is the main difference when we go to the saunas. Saunas are much hotter, 160 to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't think I've ever been in one that's 200 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow, that's hot. Now, this weekend I was in one that I think was 163, and that was the red clay room. That was warm, but I could endure it. It's still pretty good. But the humidity in those is going to be lower. So in all saunas, it's anywhere between 5 to 30%. And I think that's where we're seeing the difference in the different sauna rooms when you go to a place that has lots of different options. And so the different temperatures vary also depending on the heat source. You can have anything from a wood-burning heat source or electric heat source. Those are going to be your highest heat. Once you start going to the infrared options, those are going to be lower temperature and fall much, much below these maximum heat temperatures that you're seeing for saunas. Now, there isn't any data comparing the amount of sweat you lose in each type. You would think, oh, hotter room, more sweat, but they're just completely different entities altogether. You do have to think about the fact that you have so much humidity around you in the steam room. You have all your pores completely blocked with sweat or fluid, and so you're not able to cool the body. The skin's primary function, besides protecting from outside environment, is to cool the body. And so if you're not evaporating the water, then you're not able to cool as efficiently. Well, for that reason, you can't have as high temperatures in a steam room as you can in the saunas. You know what would happen? Your skin would boil and blister, and it would be really bad. So the lower temperatures are for the steam room, the higher temperatures are for the dry saunas. Interestingly, there's no data comparing the amount of sweat from one room to another, and we just don't know which one makes you sweat more. Now that transitions into the next big key topic here, which is that sweating is a major contributor to the water weight loss you might see from using a sauna or steam room, but there's no data to support long-term weight loss, not even short-term weight loss. There's no weight loss associated with using a steam room or a sauna. So, for the most part, you can look at a bunch of other benefits that I'm going to go through here in other different systems, but nothing particularly for weight loss. Now, it is important to point out that in fit or heart healthy individuals, there have been findings that they actually burn more calories if they use the sauna after a workout. So no weight loss benefit, but you burn more calories. And so likely it's increased metabolism benefit. But those are for fit people, remember. So if you're still listening, because I know a lot of people look at these instruments for weight loss, if you're still listening, we're going to go through a lot of other cool benefits in the other systems. So let's start at the top. We're going to go through the brain and touch on the psychological aspects. There's been studies that show there's a release of endorphins. Ooh, the feel-good chemical. This results in decreased stress, improved mood. There's studies that show that people with a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome actually have some benefit. And I'd like to add on that when you're in one of these peaceful areas, it's a good time to tap into some mindfulness, a meditation practice, or prayer, if that's something that's your belief, because really tapping into that mind-body connection when you're in a moment where you're seated quietly and without disturbance is an optimum time to do that if it's not something that you're doing throughout your day anyway. Now, moving right along into the dermatological benefits. Now, there's a lot of evidence that show there can be improvement in psoriasis, but in diagnoses like atopic dermatitis, this can actually get worse. And it makes sense. For my physicians out there, you know that psoriasis is going to be more of an autoimmune mediated system versus atopic dermatitis is a more of a immune reaction defensive mechanism. And so that's just, a little bit more background on why those would be different mechanisms of response to the heat for my physician oriented folks. If not, moving right along. Let's hit big on this topic. I gave a little teaser on my Instagram about one of the differences of the steam room and the sauna was this concept of detoxification that it can occur with the steam room and not the sauna. Now, that was almost a little trick because there actually is no evidence that shows any level of detoxification from either of these things. But the steam room does help a little bit more with removing the debris, dead skin cells, and impurities from the surface of the skin. However, it's really important to realize that there's only three organs in the body that can detoxify: the liver, the kidneys, and the colon. Your skin does not detoxify. There's actually nothing that comes up to the skin that would be considered toxic, that would be considered dangerous and unlivable. So this concept of detoxifying things that you ate or drank through your skin doesn't make sense. Okay? So let that sit for a second. Doesn't make sense. But moving on to something that does make sense, cardiovascular benefits. Oh my gosh. The data that surrounds this is pretty outstanding. There's been a lot of data that shows increased circulation benefits, but more importantly, there's two nice studies I found, one conducted in Finland and one US study where they looked at cardiovascular benefits over long-term follow-up. We're talking like 20 years. And there's findings that show that the sauna can actually lower the risk of dying from cardiovascular disease. They did analysis of a proportional relationship, meaning that Those that used it only a few times a week, like once or twice, had not as much benefit and cardiovascular risk decrease as those that used it every day of the week. And so that's fantastic to know about, that that can be such a huge benefit and that it's dose relatable. In the US study, they actually did even more work on the time required for this benefit, and they found it to be about 30 minutes of a sauna session would be required to lower blood pressure in people that had one cardiovascular risk factor. Now, it is important to remember 30 minutes, because we're going to talk about that in a few minutes here, where 30 minutes is considered quite a long time to go through a sauna. But before that, let's touch a little bit on the respiratory benefits. There's some support for sinuses clearing up, improves asthma symptoms by opening up the airways and loosening phlegm. Who just died right now when I said the word phlegm? Okay, let's just move on, because somebody's turning off the podcast this moment. Okay, so for my athletes and my gym goers, let's talk about the musculoskeletal benefits. So using the sauna specifically, not the steam room, the sauna use immediately after workout can help reduce pain and preserve your muscle strength. For people that have degenerative problems like in their knees or other joints, like let's say in the spine or hips even, any area where there's a weight-bearing joint, using the sauna can decrease the force needed to move the joint by 25%. So ultimately, that results in reduced joint pain. And so for people with chronic pain syndrome, there's been some data that supports that they actually have improvement in their symptoms as well. Well, now let's talk about how to use the sauna and steam room. First, let's remember to start low and slow, just like you would if you were starting a workout program. 5 minutes is really what you should be doing if you haven't used these routinely. Working your way up to a routine of about 20 minutes would be where you should stay at and plateau at for a really long time, because that's really the recommended time in one of the warm rooms. Once you become more advanced and you're using it daily, or you've done it very routinely now for a few years, moving up to the 30-minute time period is very reasonable, but you need to do it cautiously. And there's a few risks you should know about. So there can be a decrease in blood pressure while you're actually in there. So while it can decrease your blood pressure in the long run, what I'm talking about is immediately while you're in there, your blood pressure can drop because of the, I think it actually activates your parasympathetic systems a good bit. And then this concept of going from the sauna to cold water, don't do that. Immediate increase of blood pressure, that could be super dangerous. Dehydration, as you know, because we talked about all the sweating earlier, you need to drink plenty of water while you're using these and make sure you replenish whatever you lose when you're done. And the other thing to remember specifically about steam rooms is how prone they are to bacteria and mold and other really bad, nasty things. So using sandals when you're in there, sitting on a towel, please do not sit naked on those dirty stools, chairs, benches. Not because I'm grossed out by sitting where you sit, but do you know what's on there? So if you're unsure about how well their maintenance, just ask managers, but just make sure you don't use it if they're really dirty, because that could result in poor health for you, which is the opposite of what you're looking for. Make sure you avoid alcohol before you use them. There's actually been a report of, I think there's a study that shows it's less than 2% of people actually die from using the saunas, but of the 2% that died from using them, it was 1.5% of people were drinking alcohol. No, 1.5% of people, it was within 24-hour use, and then all of them had been using alcohol before. So outside of low blood pressure, arrhythmia, or abnormal heart rhythm, and then the dehydration, just sudden death is not what you're looking for when you're just trying to go relax. Other people to avoid using the hot rooms until you've talked to your physician and you're super certain that it's safe: pregnant women, anyone with a heart problem that's not being treated, very low pressure, very high blood pressure, seizures,
people taking antibiotics, very commonly overlooked for people in the sun and other environments too. That's a whole other topic we can get into. You need to be very careful with antibiotics when you're going into extreme environments like that. And then anything else that just alters the way your cognition is sets. So benzodiazepines, opioids, other stimulants, other tranquilizers that you just take, even if it's on a normal basis and you're used to it. If you're not used to these warm rooms, those can really affect you. So overall, the takeaway from this segment is to realize that there are some fantastic benefits of using these warm rooms, more so saunas than steam rooms, because there's just not data out there right now in the steam rooms. There hasn't been anything published comparing the two, and there's no data on the steam rooms. There's just a lot of hypotheses in which people are using the sauna data to correlate it, but there's no data to support the steam rooms. So either of those that you are going to use should be used routinely, but start low and slow and work your way up to a frequency that feels safe for you, and eventually get to a place where it fits into your daily rhythm and balance that feels supportive and not detrimental.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on how to live a healthy, fit, and balanced life 365 days a year. If you have specific questions related to the information in this podcast, you can email me at simone.maben@gmail.com.